Hi, Lauren. Welcome to What's Your Next Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat today.
So excited to chat with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a romance author, and I counted earlier today, and I am approaching 30 books published because I'm a hybrid author. I self-publish and I publish with small presses, and I have a few books with a big five publishers. I spend a lot of my times in worlds that I make up myself.
Oh my gosh. So talk to us about your journey. How did you get started? Talk to us about that journey, because especially with
Sure.
hybrid is interesting because it's like you're managing multiple places. You're doing your indie, which is basically you're the publisher. Small presses is also you're maybe having some more hands-on, and then the big five.
Yeah, so I've always loved reading. I always loved creating stories in my mind. And you can actually be a storyteller in a lot of different ways. You can be an author, but you could also be a movie maker or a song lyricist or something. But I realized that the way that I wanted to make stories was writing books, because that's just what I love to consume. So in college, I actually studied professional writing, but I did find that on the creative side of professional writing, a lot of academia at the time, it may be different nowadays, they were veering towards literary fiction, which for me wasn't fun to write. I'm sure there's a lot of authors out there who that is their jam. They love literary fiction, but I found like I was forcing myself to write that and I wasn't enjoying writing time. But once I got my degree, and then I went on to get a master's in library science, and I worked in libraries for a few years. And I eventually got into reading romance because I was reading kind of like fantasy with romantic elements in it, but I got into actual romance. And once I started trying to write that, it flowed so much easier. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what writing is supposed to be like if you enjoy your story. I mean, there's still definitely days where it's a struggle or I'm really working at it, but that's also rewarding in a way. But yeah, it's really nice to write something that you enjoy. And once I figured that out, then I knew that I wanted to be a published author. And I think that's something with new authors, a lot of times we're asked, or in interviews, people ask you, what one piece of advice could you give a new writer? I think a really important thing is to establish early on what your goal is with your writing. Because some people just want to do it as a hobby, and that's fantastic. And if you only want to do it as a hobby, then you shouldn't put like too much pressure on yourself. You shouldn't take the joy away from it. But I knew that I wanted to be a published author. And if any way possible, fully support myself with that, because that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to write books all day. I did not want to go into an office to work. As a librarian, I did enjoy those jobs, but it just wasn't bringing me the same amount of joy that writing did. So when I started looking into publishing, there was actually a decent amount of authors who were doing very well with self-publishing. This was back in 2016, 17, 18 times. And so I'm a big proponent of diversifying your income. And so I was like, I am really interested in getting a publishing deal with a large publisher, but I also don't want to slow down my publishing in order to go through what can be a very long querying process for representation. So I was like, I have lots of ideas. Why don't I self-publish some so I can kind of keep this momentum going? And then as I better myself as a writer and I get deeper into my writing career, then I can kind of suss out what stories I want to keep in my self-publishing lane and which ones I think might appeal to a more kind of traditional publishing crowd. And it took me a few years, but luckily it all worked out. And so right now I am a full-time author. I've got self-published books and I've got traditionally published books, and there's no end in sight, which is how I want it to be.
Oh my gosh, I love this journey and I love the idea. You've got to diversify your streams. You cannot just rely on it. And that you saw it as this is what I want to do. Here's where I wanted to go. And I'm not going to be attached to just one way. Because I think a lot of times when we think about writing as a publishing career is, oh, I just get a book deal, it becomes a bestseller, and that's it. But the reality is that it doesn't always work that way. It's very few and far between who get that
first yeah and feel even like when you job. Do get a big deal, it's not like they give you just a giant chunk yes. of money that you can live off for yes. the rest of your life.
That's the other part. It's like, you first of all, an advance doesn't mean you're gonna get royalties right away. You're not yeah. the advance, and the advance is not paid when you say, is there any like a nice deal? It's like $50,000, you get it in installments. You yeah. don't,
and that
get
doesn't include health care.
No. No, there's no. So it's, I think that's where the beauty of it. I'm glad that you're talking about the business of writing mm-hmm. and how to make this career, because I think it's not just one book. You kind of have to produce multiple books, and you have to test that, and you have to market them, because just the traditional publisher can market your book, but you also have to market your book.
Yeah. Honestly, if I could go back to younger Lauren, who was in college, I would tell her, get a minor in business, because yes. it would be so helpful to, I mean, I have an accountant that helps me with my finances. And before I got that accountant, I would panic every tax
yes.
time, because it's so intimidating. I didn't understand it. And I was like, I'll just sit down and I'll figure it out one day. And then I would cry.
Yeah, figure out the quarterly taxes. Like, you have to pay taxes. At some point, I have been in that place of, and I have an accountant. My brother's my accountant. God bless. He went to school thanks to me. So for a couple of years, I was actually a 1099 employee at my job. And so I had to basically figure out how to actually pay my health insurance, pay my taxes. And it was like, basically, and then pay that check, because you don't want to, yeah. I don't want to go to jail. I think that's my biggest fear. Just, I don't want to go to jail. So I'm trying to take care of things. And then you have to diversify the income streams, because you can't just rely on one thing, because one check may not come. And then you're like, okay, I have bills to pay.
And that's like, even with the big publishers, you never know, like, they're all kind of imprints of a large publisher.
Yeah.
You never know when there's going to be this gigantic major merger.
Yes.
Between these big companies, and maybe they, even if your imprint is very successful, if they fold it into something else. So it's just nothing is necessarily guaranteed. For me, it is very comforting to have revenue coming in from multiple streams.
Yeah. So let's talk about the writing and how do you juggle? Because being a full-time writer doesn't mean that you're writing all day. You're also doing administrative stuff, you're marketing, you're being the jack of all trades, unless you have support, but even managing the support. So you still have to do that. So how do you juggle not just writing for both, like being hybrid, because you also have the self-publishing machine mm-hmm. that you need to keep feeding, and then writing for a big five or a small press where you have an editor, but you have like actually things that they have to meet, the goals, the deadlines that they're imposed by corporate.
Price,
corporate job. The other, the MD, the self-publishing is your entrepreneur, you're the CEO.
Yeah. I think it was in 2001 or 2002, I realized that I was getting very jumbled up in my projects, what I should be working on. I felt like I needed to be working on 3 books a week, just getting things done. And I realized I was going to burn myself out if I didn't find some type of organization. So if anyone wants to, they can look up a Gantt chart, GANTT. And it's not a writer-specific tool. It's just a certain way to organize large projects, especially if you're working on multiple things at a time. A colleague had used it when I was working in a library and we were doing a large research project. And so she had brought it to a meeting and we had used it to organize our project. And I was like, I think that I can utilize this to organize all my writing projects. That has been very helpful for me. So now I actually, in October time, I will do a rough map of my next year, where I will map out week by week what book I expect that I'll be working on and what I will be doing for that book. Will I be writing it? Will I be editing it? Will I be sending it to an editor? And so that way, I'm a very, when it comes to what I need to do, I need to have it like visualized in front of me. I'm big on daily to-do lists and having a calendar. And so I map it out that way. And so I can see when my deadlines are, and I can work backwards from those, figuring out what I need to be doing when. That has been a lifesaver. I've been using that for years now. I even presented about using that at like the Georgia Romance Writers Conference. And like, I don't know if anyone's nerdy like me about charts, but I really like Gantt charts for mapping out multiple long-term projects over the course of a year. So that really helps me. The publishers that I work with, they know that I have self-published projects. And so another great thing about having this chart is that there is, at least I have found, some discussion with an editor at a big publisher about deadlines. They don't necessarily, or they haven't for me, said this is when it's due. No conversation about it. When you're working on the contract, I say to them, hey, I have looked at my schedule and I think that this would be a reasonable turn-in date for the draft. Does that work for you all? And so far they have said yes, because I think that the dates I have given them have been reasonable. And then, and I always give myself some buffer space because you never know what's going to go on. But yeah, I think that it's really helpful. And that's another thing that's been great about self-publishing before going into traditional publishing is that I have a really good sense of, in general, how long it takes me to write a book. So I can negotiate deadlines based off of, you know, what I know I am capable of. I think some other people who, if this is just their first or second book, they're like, I think they can write a book in this time. But then you get all these obstacles that pop up. Because I actually, when I first went full time as an author, I was like, oh, I only need 2 weeks to edit a draft of a book. No, I need 4 weeks. And I found that out. And I also thought, oh, I'm going to be writing in the morning and then doing business in the afternoon. No, I found I can't concentrate on writing unless I empty out my email inbox. So I do business in the morning and writing in the afternoon. So that's kind of that. There's a learning curve. But once you figure it out, I have found that editors, publishers will work with you as long as you're giving them reasonable dates.
Yeah, I think it helps you. One is because you have been doing this for a while, so you understand your process, you understand what your needs are. And then the other part is coming with reasonable expectations, buying yourself time. I think a lot of times we take it for granted, like, this is a day. And now a lot of times I've learned you kind of have to negotiate. And I do this in my day job a lot of times, or this is an important thing. I was like, well, let me look at my bandwidth, let me look at the specific. And usually I buy myself time. Would I actually need all the time? Probably not. But I give myself the time to have the breathing room to do it right, as opposed to you can negotiate, you can speak up. I think as women, we tend to be like, no, it's given to us. This is what we have to do. And the reality is, no, we can be empowered to speak up and say, well, this is what works for me. It's a reasonable time based on the specific needs. And this is how we can work it out and negotiate it from the beginning and have those open communications, as opposed to be surprised. And then stop.
And honestly, they would rather you be honest in the beginning because, if you're like a week out from a deadline and you tell them I need 2 more weeks, that sets everyone's schedule off.
Yes.
And your book could get pushed out a year because they just can't fit it in the production schedule anymore. So, yeah, it's much better to ask for the time up front if you can.
All right. So thank you for talking to us about the business of writing and like the specifics. I think a lot of our readers might have questions about it. And they might think about, what does it look like? I want to write all day. And it's actually it's a business and there are specifics. But let's talk about Love and Play Side, which is your latest release. It's a rom-com with Traditional 5 book. It's actually basically learning how to fly a plane, literally. And having and getting horny.
Yes, horny in the cockpit. Oh, no.
Yes. So talk to the elevator pitch and why should readers pick it up?
Sure. Yeah. The inspiration of this book, I've wanted to write a pilot romance for a while because my dad is a pilot. Okay. He does it as a hobbyist. He got his pilot's license the day he met my mom. So there's a little bit of romance. And there's always, or what I find when I'm writing a book is I'll take a little nugget of truth from my life and then I'll build an entire story off of it. And so it's not my life, but there's a dash of inspiration from experiences that either I or people around me have had. But I've grown up going to small airports all the time with him because he always wants these kids, you want to go flying with me? And of course, like his heart is broken that none of us actually wanted to get licenses. I'm like, I let you teach me how to drive stick shift, but I'm a little in the air is a little much for me. But I would love it if some readers came away from this book wanting to get their pilot's license because I know that it brings my dad so much joy. And he had a fun time helping me with all the logistics of this book. And so that's been great. I've got a very supportive family. They know I write smutty content. I'm like, Dad, there's on-page erotic scenes in this book. And he's, okay. For the people who have read P.S. I Hate You, which is my other book with Berkeley before this one, this book is not as emotional as that one. I do like to preface that. again, as I've said, I've written close to 30 books now, and they vary in the amount of times that you will cry during them. Yeah. So I would say that this is a lighter book, but there's still that tension of will they, won't they? It is a single POV, and so you're all getting it from Beth's perspective, and she is down on her luck. She's got a lot of debt, but she just has this dream of getting her license. And her half-brother, who has had a much more financially stable life, and is a golden retriever guy. A lot of people love Sean, her half-brother. He's just like a very sunshine person. He's like, oh, well, you should go flying with my best friend, George. And she's like, George, the guy who hates me? And so yeah, she thinks her brother's best friend hates her. He's a very kind of stoic, doesn't say much kind of guy. But of course, you as the reader start picking up on the little like hints of, oh, I think maybe he just likes her so much that his brain is exploding every time he's near her. And that makes it hard to talk. Yeah. So,
and a virtual in a cockpit,
right? And a Cessna cockpit is very small. I mean, your shoulders are brushing, your thighs are against each other. She focuses on his thighs a lot. He's got good thigh game. So it's a lot of, but there's also found family aspects. I really wanted to show just this variety of people in your life that you could have supporting you. And yeah, I think it is a really, it's a fun time. There are emotional moments, but it gives you those, like, all the feels. There is a grumpy dog that is based off of my dog. So if you like a dog that hates everyone except for his people, that's in there.
Oh my gosh, I love this. I love the opening scene because we are at an emergency landing and George saves the day. And he doesn't want to be known that he saved a day.
Oh yeah, he's a very humble person. He's and like, yeah, that he goes into the diner where she works and he's like, you're a hero. And he's like, no, could I please just have a sandwich? And yes. Just don't talk about it.
Yes, I don't want to talk about it. And he also has financial stability. He also has money. Like, he's the ideal hero. He's like, yeah, I don't want to take credit for any of this stuff. It's just, it just happened. I just saved a day.
That's normal. I'm sure a bunch of you have landed a plane in an emergency situation.
Yes. And I can give you pilot lessons. Like, it's not a big deal. And that to me, like, how much do I pay you? And he's, it's okay. You know?
Yeah. Money is a big deal for people who don't have it. Yes. That's the thing. A lot of people are like, money can't buy happiness. And I'm like, well, it can take away some stress.
Yeah. So, it can give you access. It can give you take stress from like actually figure out, do I eat right now or do I pay my house or pay my health insurance, which is Beth's issue. Do I save a wife or do I actually, you know, someone dies?
So she has all these, she builds up every time that money needs to be exchanged. It's a big deal for her.
Yeah.
And George is the male main character, for those who don't know. He takes the intensity of the money exchange out of it, but not in a way that feels, I would say, dismissive. He's just, no, money doesn't have to be an exchange in this situation. You don't have to stress about it. And he's not, money doesn't matter, but he's also like, it, you don't need to pay me. I don't need you to pay me.
I know. Because it's true. I think it's, and it's our working. I don't know, like, being this, I think Beth's experience of with her trauma, her childhood trauma, that she's coming in and it's like feeling left out and her secret. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways it colors her decisions and how she interacts with her brother, with George, and the financial impact that it does and how she actually makes decisions based on that.
Yeah. And she's very much a people pleaser person. So like some of the decisions that she makes in this book are going to be frustrating for readers.
Yes.
I fully understand that. But I think that they match well with her personality. She wants to keep the people around her happy. And she doesn't necessarily always make the best decisions. But that is her goal at the end. And it's a good goal. So you're like, oh, Beth, stop it. Don't do that. And she's like, no, it makes sense. And you're like, it doesn't really.
Yes. Which is what makes the story a story. You can't just have a conflict-free in real life. I love it in real life. But when you're reading, you need a little bit of conflict. You need a little bit of angst. You need a little bit of emotional. Like, you have to have bad decisions, people making bad decisions for you to actually grow from
that. Or else the book would be like 20 pages.
Yes.
And then they were all perfect and none of them needed therapy.
Yes. So this is Love in Plain Sight. It's available in December and it's available on audio. I share with Lauren that I listen to the audio. Carissa Becker narrates it and she does an excellent job narrating it.
The time that she does a man voice, I'm like, oh my goodness, Carissa.
So if Carissa is one of your favorite narrators, as she is for me, you're just gonna be like, this is an auto buy. But you can also get it on ebook or print, and it's available all the different bookstores and stuff like that. Lauren, tell us, would you have if you have any books to recommend our listeners to pick up?
Yes, definitely. I mean, where I am in the world, which is North Carolina, we're getting the fall season, it's getting chilly outside. And so I'm a mood reader, and I find that when it gets cooler outside, I'm definitely looking for cozy books. And so a few recent reads I had that just gave me the perfect cozy vibes were A Witch's Guide to Magical Innkeeping. Oh my goodness, such a good book. Even if you're not a big magic reader, it is a very approachable magic book. It's set in modern day UK. The audiobook is fantastic. The narrator is so great. And the setting is amazing. It's got a really good found family. It's quirky, but it's also emotional. I was like tearing up during parts of it. So highly recommend. It's the follow-up to A Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches, which is also an amazing book. Another cozy book that I recently read was Drawn Together by Juliana Smith. That one is just very cute. That's a contemporary romance. It is what I love that she did. It's a single POV, but at the end of each chapter, you get a little bit of a dip into the male main character's head in such a good, tantalizing way. That is a closed door romance. So if I do write open door romances, but if you prefer to read romances that fade to black, that's a great option. And then I was feeling very nostalgic lately, and I take my dog on a walk through this park, and they recently put up a little free library, and I was about to fill it with romance books, but then I realized it's across the little pathway from a playground, and I was like, oh, this little free library should probably be filled with kids' books or maybe fade to black. I don't want to put a smutty book and then a kid pick it up and be like, oh, what's this? But anyway, I was thinking I'm definitely planning on going to, and it's empty now, except for random business books. Sorry, this is like a
I have a
frustrating
little
tangent
free
of
library too, and
mine.
right now it's millennial aughts, like chick lit from the aughts, and I'm like, yeah, but no one is picking them up, so we gotta update it.
So I was just thinking, I was like, what, like kids' books, YA books would I love to fill this little free library with? And I just went back to the book that made me fall in love with reading, or the author who made me fall in love with reading is Tamara Pierce. Or Tamora Pierce. I always read their names. I don't know how to pronounce them. But if you want a magical, just an amazing fantasy, romanticy, they weren't categorized as romanticy because they were written a few decades ago and the romanticy wasn't a thing at the time. But they are, I would say some of her books do fall under the romanticy category, but they're like YA, but they're good for adults. But just anything by Tamara Pierce. Alana, The First Adventure is probably a great place to start, but just I think they hold up. So if you're looking for a fantasy adventure, definitely Alana, The First Adventure. And if you're looking to give books to young adults in your life, any of her books, they're still around, they're still great. Go for it.
I love this. And a good tip if you have a little free library, not just for you, for listeners, is go find the book outlets at sales. Every so often they have a $5.99, $3.99 sale. And you can stock up on books. Like they have a lot of new releases, but they have old backlist titles. And you can just go shopping, go buy quite a few books, and just stock up your little free library if you want to be a steward. And you're like, hey, I want to promote literacy, and here's some
Yeah,
stuff.
maybe it's like the librarian in me, but I'm like, I want to fill this with books. I
Yes.
just
And
want
I
to,
don't want
like, I
this
wish I
like
had more money to
business.
buy books to give to people.
Yeah, like I don't want business books. I want like actual like reading books and like fun books, like
Like,
stuff like
this is
that.
supposed to be joyous.
Yes. So, Lauren, tell us where to find you online.
I would say probably the best place to find me would be on Instagram. Lauren Connolly Romance is my hashtag there. I'm also on TikTok under Lauren Connolly Romance. Those are the two platforms that I most often post about what's coming up. I've got multiple events that are going to be coming out for Love in Plain Sight. It's coming out in December, which bookstores get really busy with holiday stuff in December. So I'm actually going to be touring a few bookstores in January. So yeah. For readers who are in kind of the North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Atlanta area, I'll be going to a round to a different indie bookstore in a few of those places. So I'd love to see people and say hi and make sure I'm not speaking to an empty room.
I love this. And I love that it's in January because it's like, we need something else to look forward
right.
to.
So yeah. Look at that. Start the year off loving books.
Yes. And it's so awesome. Thank you, Lauren, for being in the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to The What to Read Next. For more book lists, cozy reads, and library tips, visit thewhattoreadnextblog.com. Your next great read might be waiting there.